The Moving Iron Podcast is brought to you by these great sponsors. Are you looking to value your equipment more accurately, target the right buyers and close more deals, reach your ideal customer? Then look no further. Fusible isn't just about ag data, it's about action. Our best-in-class solution empowers you to value your equipment accurately, make informed decisions, and find the perfect prospects. Ignite your dealership's growth at fusible.com/movingiron-podcast. Out in the field, every decision counts. You wouldn't plant without testing your soil, so why would you prospect blind? Introducing EDA, your one-stop shop for ag equipment intel. EDA goes beyond specs and prices. You get deep dive data on every piece of equipment, like UCC filings that help track ownership changes and uncover potential sales leads, D&B firmographics, which help you understand the financial health and buying power of potential customers, market trends that help you stay ahead of the curve, and insights on equipment demands and pricings. With EDA, you're not just looking at data, you're seeing opportunity. You find the right buyer, sell smarter, and build lasting relationships. Visit edadata.com for your free demo and unlock the power of knowledge. For over 80 years, Iron Solutions has been your go-to data source for ag dealers, lenders, and manufacturers. Get powerful appraisal and value forecasting tools that fuel profitable decisions anytime, anywhere. Get your free demo at ironsolutions.com. Iron Solutions, confidence in every click. Today, there are many ways to finance ag equipment, but nobody delivers simple, fast, or flexible financing like AgDirect. Learn more about your options to buy, lease, and refinance equipment at agdirect.com. Valley Transportation has been hauling ag and construction equipment across the country for the past 33 years. Call Parker at 800-657-4910 for all your trucking needs. At Valley Transportation, our goal is to help you reach yours. This podcast is proudly provided by Axon, helping dealers move more iron for the past 100 years. Find out more at axontire.com. Move more iron with Axon.
Moving iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Moving iron time and time again. Through the years you'll find us here. Moving iron.
Hello and welcome to Moving Iron Podcast. I got Rich Possum back here to talk about what's going on in the world of economics. Rich, how you doing this morning, man?
Good, thank you.
Good, man. Talk a little bit about that podcast you have and where people can find it.
My podcast, you can go to criticalpoint.podbean.com. Now, that's the site that presents the videos, audio, some free, some locked up, and that's about all it has. If you want to learn more about myself, as well as found links over to that video audio stuff, you would go to Critical. So both of those sites. And my service provides morning updates throughout the week and then a weekly update. And they are set up separately. And some updates are just for the grain markets. Some updates are for economy, bonds, interest rates, gold, Bitcoin, crude oil, all that fun stuff. And then there's the stock market, and the primary focus is really stock market economy and some grains, but you have to look at interest rates and you have to look at these other things. And what I do is provide forecast of how it's going to fluctuate day to day, week to week, month to month. I even get into very long term. I have a once a decade sell signal in the stock market, and there's always been a recession and economic problems from that. It's worked very well for me in recent decades. And then I come up with a once-a-decade buy signal. So we can go that slow, that long-term, and some people might say, worth being long-term, you know, the buy-and-hold stuff died out. And, all I can tell you is history back to the late 1800s shows stock market goes up 100 to more than 400% per decade. But it drops minus 20 to minus 50% per decade. So I'm there to help with that. I'm more of an intermediate to long-term trader and long-term investor, but I do offer things for the short-term people, such as, is today an update in the grains, or is it up for the stock market, or is it going to be down? And where are we going during the month, during the week? And so a little for everyone is what I offer. And it's based basically on business cycles when I've learned that the business cycles, if you can come up with a clock-like model like I have that studies everything from minutes to a few hundred years, believe it or not. And even right now, as we're speaking, my computer is literally tracking by the minute and coming up with conclusions. Does this mean something for these bigger trends? I mean, it just operates all the time trying to keep track of going on. So the beauty is it can show us these periods of time that, hey, in the next week or so, we're probably going to get some bad news. And then you might get to a point where saying, you know what, we're going to have bad news for the next 2 or 3 months. And then, of course, that once a decade thing is basically saying you're on for a recession and we could have problems for 1, 2, 3 years. So to me, the value of this is really not so much of how accurately we forecast the upside, but when is that bad side coming so we can step aside or evaluate. We may decide, you know, it's not worth what we're trying to do on a bigger picture. At least we know we're going to take a hit here and we're not going to do anything about it. It helps people make those kind of decisions. And a cheap rate, it's $28, whereas some of my competitors have been around for decades, are probably $800 a year. Yes, they do make a newsletter. I do not do a newsletter. I no longer have that kind of staff and don't have the time and interest in it. Everything's video, audio, pretty much, occasionally blogging and on my website and stuff like that.
Right on, man. All right. So let's jump in to talk about what's going on in the and also one more thing. They want to look you up on Twitter. Where can they find you at?
That would be at @rich_possn, P-O-S-S-O-N.
And you have a LinkedIn page too, don't you?
I do. And now I can't think what the address
is. I think it's Richard Possn, if I remember right.
It would be Richard, yeah. Yes.
Yeah, so just look him up there, guys. Rich got a ton of information. Check that stuff out. I listen to his stuff that he puts out, and there's a lot of good information there. The only thing I like about what he's doing there is that's just quick. The stuff in the morning, just a quick 5 to 7 minute deal. It's not a big 30 or 40 minute long deal. It's just a quick hitter, hitting the high points and getting you out there on your way to start making those decisions. So check out his stuff. Rich's stuff's well worth your time to check it out. So, all right, Rich, let's talk a little bit about what's going on in the economy. Had a jobs report come out. The job report was something like 100 jobs more or something like that than what they anticipated. And so blew it out of the water. I guess talk a little bit about that jobs report and where do you think these jobs are coming from?
Yeah, it was over 300,000 new jobs, and one of ADP, which is one of the big names of trying to forecast. I think they were like, I can't pick on them. Sometimes they do, but mostly that is a very difficult number to forecast. It is just erratic, wild, and crazy. Zoom out, though, you can see trends. And we've been in the trend since 2020 of more and more jobs and more people working, and they're making money. And the jobs report was, I was shocked. Some of the big name Wall Street just come out and said, this is like perfection. It's just a fantastic jobs report. Yes, there was some evidence of cooling off on some of the hourly wages, but still strong gains in hourly wages. And again, the Federal Reserve would like things to cool off a little bit. The JOLTS jobs report came out ahead of the monthly jobs report. The JOLTS gives us an idea of what's the availability of jobs. And it's like 9-something million available jobs. Well, it used to be at 11 million, so it's kind of cooled off a little. But you know, we've had years where we had 2 or 3 million available jobs. So that's the 9 million is still a very strong number. And then as you dig through other things in that jobs report, a lot of little metrics and dynamics there, you could just see this economy is doing really, really well, okay, from a jobs perspective. But if you see what's going on with GDP, it's doing well. I think the Federal Reserve down in Atlanta has raised up above 3%. They were up above 2% at one time. And that's been my forecast starting last year. I said this year we're going to see GDP pick up the pace. It's doing it. And so that coincides with the jobs. Businesses are expanding. They're growing. They're doing more. Now, we also had PMI report last week. That's a monthly report. In years past, I've used it as a clue of where GDP is going. It does a very strong correlation. Well, the interesting thing is over the past 12, 24 months, the manufacturing PMI has done something weird. It just stayed like in recession territory or slow economy territory. And yet the services PMI was doing quite well. It never went into recession territory. It went well above 50 for a little while, showing good economic growth. I have switched for 30 years. I've used a PMI manufacturing, and most people switched long before I did to services or the combined. I've recently switched to services just because it's the manufacturing acts a little weird. Well, last week we got enough evidence manufacturer probably is on board. I do think it was in its own little recession at one time, but it really wasn't reflecting what's going on in the country. Now it's catching up to GDP. It's in positive territory, so the manufacturing industries are growing. And you can see they're feeling a little more comfortable where they're going, inflation, prices, jobs, and whatnot. And then, of course, money's being spent federally, nationally, in the sense of boosting manufacturing, lots of construction out there. All that's got to come online here in coming years of creating still more jobs, or at least creating some better jobs, a shift in jobs. So you add all those three up of what we got for data last week, and it's just a two thumbs up for the economy of working quite well, and the stock market was really happy. So that was last week's story. And this week we got a little bit different information. So,
yeah, yep, right on.
So this week we can switch to inflation, because this morning we got an inflation report. And this morning it came in 3.5%. The Dow Jones pollsters were looking for 3.4. So, you know, my first reaction was, well, so what? It's up. Who cares, you know? Problem is, they had already, that 3.4 was already higher. They already were forecasting a rise in inflation. And my modeling and my service here has been telling subscribers since late last year, you're going to see an uptick in inflation by summer. Well, it looks like we're on our way with it, okay? And so the point is, it's upset the stock market that they raised their estimates and they still weren't right. So they're thinking, man, this thing's even hotter still. Well, it does make sense relative to the jobs report, but the problem is nobody really wants to pay more for things. And so it's upset the stock market. They're worried over the Fed Reserve, which we can talk about next. But, you know, my gut feeling is it's going to be quite a while to get the inflation down to 2% that like the Fed wants. I've thought that for some time. You can still see some of the trends with inflation are really down hard. It's trying, but there's still other components that are going up. And let me get out my little cheat here, some notes and reports. It's like we have motor vehicle maintenance and repair eight up over the past 12 months compared to the prior 12 months. Hospital services up 7.5%. Owners equivalent rent, nearly 6%. Rent of primary residence, almost 6%. Electricity up 5%, and it goes on and on. But we do have some good news in a sense. New vehicles are down. Dairy and related products almost down 2%. Used cars and trucks down a little more than 2%. Natural gas, of course, has been beaten up recently, and that's down 3.2%, and that's a pipeline price, not the futures or just plain cash price. That's down a lot. Fuel off almost 4%. And even airline fares are down 7%. Of course, they had raised them quite a bit before. So there are things that are actually getting cheaper compared they were, say, 12 months ago. But in general, how inflation works is you don't find that many items on the list that are actually negative on any given month or even a given year. Most things generally work higher price-wise. So the Fed isn't trying to beat the percent inflation to negative, because that may actually be a bad sign. You're going into recession. People can't afford to pay. And now you got to start cutting your prices. All the Fed wants to do is lower it down to what they think is a normal rate of about 2% inflation. What that means is year after year, you're paying 2% more and more. And it's gone on for the history of this country. It's gone on for the history of this world. I really shake some people up when I say, hey, inflation's been around for 10,000 years. What makes you think you're going to kill inflation? No, right. You don't have the history to back it up. That's not how the system works. I don't think it'll ever change. But we would like to keep inflation low so, you know, hey, we have some leftover money. We don't have to keep paying people more and more just because of inflation, things like that. So the Fed would like to get it back to 2%. As I look back 100 and some year history of inflation in this country, we should be happy with 3%, really. It's not out of the ballpark here. I mean, so I want the Fed to be careful of how much they want to beat it up, how hard aggressively, because it does look like the free market system, our economic system, is trying. We're trying to rebuild supplies, and you can just see it in the commodities. I mean, some of these commodities are off 30% compared to just 2 years ago. So the commodity people are doing their job, bringing down prices. Some of these other people aren't helping out very well. And some of them are energy companies who, even if the oil price is down in the futures, we notice we go to the pump, and we wind up paying more, and they're making right. Big money, and they're making – so there's some bad players within our free market system really isn't true for free market. It's not the government's problem. It's a business problem. We're doing it to ourselves here, where we're rigging the system a little bit and making too much money for some businesses. And it's costing you and I at the store. There are people working on that, and that is going to change, but I can't tell you how quickly. It may not be the next decade before we get countries really fired up about that and do something about those greedy companies that are really starting to destroy our free market economic system, I think. So on balance, this morning, stock market off 60, 70 points, Dow Jones off 500 points, 50 points is for the S&P 500. And it's going to get a little slippery here probably for a few days. But as I zoom out, I see no change to my long-term outlook in the economy that we can discuss a little bit later here. But I'm assuming you'd like to know where are we going then with this high inflation with the Fed Reserve? Because, as you know, yes, they've been dropping some hints here of may not lower the way a lot of people were thinking. One of them last week said he doesn't see a reason why we would lower any this year. And the trade had been expecting more than three. They've been acknowledging, they've been thinking about 3 to 5. They're finally on to 3. And the reason stock market is down is they're saying, well, gee whiz, maybe it won't be any at all this year. Now, there's other people, the Fed, saying 1. Others are saying it still could squeeze 3 in this year. But they're also saying, well, probably isn't starting to June. And they're kind of hinting they may even be later than that. And I think the stock market's worried. They were pretty much thinking, okay, it didn't work for March. It didn't work for May, or it doesn't look like it's going to work for May. I think they thought June is like the deadline they will lower. But I'm not so sure about it. I've used June for, 8 months now. I'm starting to wonder, maybe it's going to take a little longer to do it. Now, to counter this, there's some Wall Streeters and more on the banker side are saying this is costing the Fed a lot of money in some of their own, how they own bonds and sell bonds and this and that, that this higher interest rate is costing them as well. It's costing the government. It's probably costing the government and the Fed Reserve more than it's costing the American people themselves, because a lot of Americans do have the rates locked in. Companies have it locked in. However, in the next 2 or 3 years, some of those companies are going to be rolling over. Their mortgage, their debt will be going off. They're going to have to refinance. They're suddenly going to go from 2% to 5, 6, 7%. So there could be some shakeups down the road. But what the Wall Streeters bankers are pointing out is it may be the Fed needs to lower regardless of inflation just to help out of what people are spending on this interest rate. And so that's something to think about. I could see that could become an interesting factor to change your attitude. There's a few other little things. Some people are saying interest rates are actually holding inflation up. And I kind of forgot about that. It's not really in my model. It was 20 or 30 years ago. I used to say, if you raise interest rates, it raises the cost, and then they pass that cost on to consumers, it raises inflation. I think that only works a minority of the time, small amount of the time. But it makes me wonder now. And so the Fed, once again, the Fed probably has one of the harder jobs than anybody of trying to work with our economy and our free market system, because you're damned if you do and if you don't. Right. Right. You can step into it and not. And it's kind of like, yes, the Fed ought to lower rates even with this strong economy to help out on that interest rate thing and a few other things. And yet they're sitting there going, well, gee, if you look at the general rule book of free market economics, why in the world would you lower interest rates when the economy is doing so great? I mean, that's when you do raise them, to make sure the economy doesn't blow up. Well, right at the moment, I don't see risk of the economy blowing up. I really don't. And the Fed's not going to raise that. I can see why. But even I'm starting to wonder, are they going to lower it in June? You know, it may be a bit later on us. And the later it goes, is this going to stress the stock market? Well, I think the stock market is so strong right now because of this strong economy that I've said for probably 6 months now, to me, when we get bearish news that we think would make the market go down for months on end, or it's going down 10, 20%, we're going to get hammered. When you're in this type of a business cycle bull market, it doesn't come down as much, or if it does come down that fast, it's like it gets it over quickly. You don't get into 4, 5, 6 month problems. I'm not saying the market won't stall out at times for several months, but you don't get, if you want that kind of seriousness, you have to be in a long-term business cycle bear market. And it's just not there, all right? I just don't know. I feel like I've really won against some big, big players on Wall Street that were so worried about a recession over the last 2 years. And I just said, no, they just don't realize at what point are we in on that timeline or that track, if you will, for tracking the economy relative to these business cycles. They've always worked for the history of this country. I can't see where they've ever been wrong. They've been difficult to keep up with sometimes and a bit more volatile, but it just works. So I'm remaining optimistic on the stock market. This negative actions on a longer term basis, probably another buy the dip where you have to be brave. And boy, it can be so scary saying, why am I buying this going straight down? And it's that old saying of you might be catching a falling knife. Keeps falling more than you think. Cut your fingers off. And, you know, it's hard. It's very hard. I'm going to have my model saying, hey, it's 90% probability. Close your eyes and buy it. And even I'm sitting there saying, well, I don't know. Let's give it a few more hours here and see. But I truly believe probably by the end of the month, we'll see the stock market swinging back up and we're going to see higher this year. I think if we're going to get into some significant problem, it might be later this year on into next. And seasonal people, they normally, you know, 50 years ago, they would say, sell in May, go away. That was their big saying. And then they would buy back in October. And it is interesting. History showed you'd make the most money and reduce your risk the best doing that. You just didn't want to be in stocks from summer into, say, October. But I'm so glad someone put out a study because my gut feeling has been that hasn't worked in a long time. And he showed really the stock market probably tops out in July, not May. And then he showed during election years, stock market probably doesn't top out to September. In fact, it can stay up to the end of the year. And that's what my model's leaning towards. Probably going to top out later rather than sooner. There's plenty more upside here. But I do think by early next year, we could see a 7% setback in the stock market. And then the beauty of it is we're just going to start over and put it right back up in 2025 on into 20. So the stock market's around the upper 5,100 area for the S&P 500 right now. That's going over 6,000 going into 2026. I'm quite convinced of that. It's going to take an asteroid, nuclear bomb to upset it. And even then, probably somebody will buy the stock market after everything settles down. So it's just how history works. I've often said if they had stock markets in the dark ages, we'd probably learn that there were still higher stock markets in there. And why? You know, I get this question. You've even asked me, well, why does this work this way in these cycles? You know, one of the simplest reasons is we all get up in the morning and we go to work. And we may hate our country. We may hate ourselves. We may hate everybody around us. We may hate our job or business. But we go to work, and Americans are pretty good at working. And they're some of the most productive people in the world, and right at the moment, they're at record highs in productivity. But we need to be proud of ourselves for that, all right? Now, some of them aren't getting paid what they should be. That's why we're seeing the friction and the labor unions and things that President Biden been working on, because the productivity just went to the moon, but the wages didn't. And if you look back at prior generations, they did better than what we're doing today. Okay, if you can adjust it for that. But very good productivity for our country. And the point is, at the end of the day, we go home and we spend that money. We don't do the best job of saving it, okay?
We do that,
Americans are great at productivity, but they're also the world's biggest and best consumer. We spend. If we're bored, well, let's go to the shopping mall, you know? Well, we used to say that. Now we get online. But, we are big consumers. So we spend that money. Well, that circulates the money around, and this is what I've explained for many, many years in capitalism. Well, you got to make sure somebody doesn't plug that hole so it doesn't run well, which right at the moment, the rich helped us 20 years ago. The rich are now hurting us now. They get too big of a share. They're plugging some of those holes of where that money should be flowing through the towns, through the country, and whatnot. But in general, it is flowing. The wheels of commerce are turning, and the companies wind up making money. Well, if they make money, stock prices are worth more. If stock prices are worth more, then overall the stock market goes higher. And you can just see, I want to say this works like clockwork, but that's probably going too far because a clock implies precision. Really, it's more of a rhythm. And my clock, I always say, is kind of sloppy and noisy. But at midnight, all the hands are going to be at midnight, and I want to know when it's midnight. Hey, it's time to take my profit and get the heck out of there. All right. And so that's the beauty of it, because I think the clock might be sloppy, noisy, speed slows. What it's doing is picking up, but that's how things work. And so I'm now more appreciative of professionals years ago saying, and even some of these hot kids today on Wall Street that totally computerized their investing and trading. They've often said that the stock market is a fuzzy logic system. Well, I've learned the economy is too. And what that means is it's just sloppy at times. Okay. It gets noisy and gets volatile and a little crazy. And this also brought something interesting. Old timers used to say, fundamentals, the news, the information, the data explains 20 to 80% of price fluctuation. Well, that, okay, good. But that means that sometimes if it's only explaining 20, 80%, then that means 80 of that bull or bear market, you really can't explain. That doesn't sound too good to me. But at the same time, that fundamentals of news and information is valid. It's useful. You don't throw it out like some people do that watch charts. And I'm a chart watcher. I like them both. I'm going to watch a chart. I'm going to watch that fundamental data in the news because I've learned that that fundamentals that they're talking about, 20, 80%, I call it S fundamentals. There's an X fundamental that's more about the people, the machine, the money, the marketplace. It explains 80 to 20%. And that includes that technical and chart. But if it's 80 to 20%, it means they're not always accurate either. In theory, if you combine the two, you get the full story and you're able to explain 100% of price fluctuation. Well, it's not that simple. I've learned you need some tools because this is a chaotic dash order system we're in. It goes with that fuzzy logic. The emphasis is on order. We do run a more orderly system than you might think, but we have these moments of chaos where we kind of lose our minds a little bit. We sell too hard. We buy too hard. And I'm really appreciative now of revisiting some of these concepts of how things work because I can see it's built into my model after 30 years here, and primarily due to these business cycles. There's other patterns. There's other methods. But I think this is one of the best things I've seen after 40 years of dealing with commodities, stock market, and economy, and interest rates. So this is all going to hang in there where the economy's got plenty of upside action, plenty of potential power to go here, and more growth. And therefore, the stock market also has a lot more to go. And I just heard of yet another Wall Streeter. I think it's Wells Fargo. They've been at 4,600 for the end of the year. They just slammed it to 5,500. And some of my friends said, boy, we got to investigate that and see what group of analysts, because these big companies, they have several different groups of analysts. Sometimes they have opposite opinions of one another. So I haven't got the feedback from them, what they're learning, or who actually said that at Wells Fargo. I'm fine with it. It works for me. I don't think it'll really be that high by the end of the year. It may get there sooner and then back off. But at any rate, with today's inflation news, I realize stock market's acting a little scary here. It's just one of those brief moments again, and we're going to return pretty soon back to acknowledging the economy's growing. Stocks are worth their money. Let's enjoy it and try not to beat it up too quickly because, yes, another day of reckoning is coming, and I think it's near the end of the decade, but we'll see. I'm always looking. I know I talk very bullish, but I do look at my shoulders saying, can somebody break this machine? Because that's what it's going to take right now. Not a hammer, but a sledgehammer to it to break it. It's that strong. But I do look for those things. Whereas when we get near the end of this decade, it won't take a sledgehammer to break it. It'll take somebody to just make a little tap, and suddenly the whole machine falls apart. Okay.
Yeah.
But not today. Right. It looks good to me, Casey. So we'll hang in there.
Okay. All right. So Thursday, I'm recording this on, what's today? Wednesday the 10th. Tomorrow, on the 11th, there's a crop report comes out, stocks report comes out. As you look at what's going on in the grains right now, you've seen some very turbulent, you know, ups and downs, some very volatility is where I'm looking for. Some volatility that's kind of popping up here and there. Corn market, again, you know, you start looking at what's going on there. And you talked about this last time, that the shorts just keep going short until someone tells them they can't. And so we're starting to see that. You're starting to see a little bit of that short position starting to dissolve a little bit. Not a lot, but just a little bit. I guess as you're looking at those short positions now, depending on what this report comes out and says, what are your thoughts on seeing a reversal anytime soon in the short position and maybe going more long in corn, for example, as we look into the future with the dryness that we're seeing in South America, for example?
Yeah, I've already called some important bottoms here for subscribers, and it's been long enough. I can just go ahead and put it out there for free. I'm bullish into summer. I don't know how much bullish I want to be. I can come up with a cyclical crop problem that's due, and this thing could just explode like a rocket and be up a huge amount. I can see how it's up only somewhat going into summer. What I'm finding is it's now down to 20% probability of like lower over the next few months. I've got to give it a chance. I can be wrong. I'll look for how to back up on it. USDA report, I don't really have any magical numbers there or a good feeling which way they'll go. The model is favoring that even if they want to sell it and don't like it that day, I wouldn't be surprised the markets will be recovering next week. And I think it really is trying to work higher into summer. And I do think, man, you look at some of the temperatures around the world. I mean, Africa is just wild and crazy hot. They have crop issues. I've seen them. I have contacts there. I actually personally know of families that to farm it there. They've had issues, okay? And then you look over in India, it could get really problematic for them, not necessarily in what we think like wheat or something. It can be some of the other crops. But in the Northern Hemisphere, well, even in England, they're now behind on some of the plants because it was simply too wet. And in some of Europe, they're already leaning to above seasonal temps. Now, again, we're looking at just seasonal temps. So, you know, by summer, maybe it won't be as hot, okay? But it's running really above what it should be for spring months. The entire world is, okay? And so we're due for some issues. Can't guarantee it hits this year, but it is something to think about that the markets right today have got it wrong. They have not dialed in some of the risk, and they may be waking up to that, I think, slowly in the next 30 days. They may want to see how fast the planting goes. If it's great fast planting, they'll probably be bearish. If it slows, then they'll probably be bullish. So it may take them a while. They may not even get seriously excited to June, July. But I'm rather optimistic here. I realize there's people out there saying the bounce we've seen the last 2 or 3 weeks, and it's just another selling opportunity here. The world does have enough grain, but the global economies are improving. I like what I see over in China. It's going to be a struggle. It's been slower than what I wanted to say when I started forecasting a year ago for rebound, but the rebound is working. It's just not quick. But overall, I think the global economy starts to catch up somewhat with the U.S. The U.S. is very, very strong. The world is not, but it is improving. And I'm very anxious to keep an eye on a company in the Netherlands that does a world trade index, global index on what's being shipped around the world. And that index is due to bounce. If I can get a bounce in just the next few months, then I think that index is going to be up until late this decade. I think it's going to be aligned with the U.S. economy and in a sense of no problems to near the end of this decade. So that you can translate it back, reverse modeling or top-down modeling, and just sends a message that must be there's going to be more business being done around the world. And that includes import exports of commodities. But again, I don't have anything out there that's telling me today, oh, you know, these prices are so cheap, they have to explode. No, the model is just saying it's cheap enough that it really should be difficult to go lower from here. And that it is a setup to at least bounce some by the summer, and yet the door is open for some things like my climate model that, granted, it's not short-term weather. I won't use it during the crop season, but it's right or close to 80% probability that it can be a problem this year. So that's not as high as I wanted, but it's there. So to me, I think you're going to see the erosion of the bears and the funds now into summer. There'll always be some betting on the downside. It'll come and go, but they got a little too bearish down. They overshot things early last year, or early this year, I should say. But, you know, it's interesting. The commercials were willing to go along with that. They didn't fight that early this year. They really were thinking in terms of, you know, how good is the demand and what if you get another good crop and this and that. But the commercials in the last few weeks, as I look at some of the basis and cash indexes compared to the futures, they're a little reluctant to bet on the lower downside. And is this also translating back to the farmer backing off? Has he sold enough to be comfortable now till after planting, you know? So I see some factors I've seen every year for 40 years of watching. If I get a sell signal, I'll take it and I'll bet on downside. But boy, what do I really want to do? I want to bet on higher prices in the summer, give it a chance for.
Okay. Rich, probably a good place to stop, man. If folks want to reach out to you and get more information about what you're doing, go with your podcast one more time where they can find that. What's the best way to do that?
Bean.com. That's the quickest thing to get right to a list of videos, audios. You can click on them. There's usually a message on each one of how you can sign up. And just keep in mind, most are locked up, but I do put some free ones out there. And I also put out just informational things to think about and consider. And then if they want to learn more about me, but also find links to over those videos, audios, and a blog that I update once in a while. So those two websites. And then they can go to Twitter at rich_Possen. And then they can email me too, rich@ag-financial.
Well, Rich, appreciate you being on, man. We'll look forward to having you on next month.
Thank you very much.
Right on. I'm Casey Seymour with Moving Iron Podcast. Check me out on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Moving Iron LLC. Go to LinkedIn at Moving Iron Podcast. Check out the video version of this on the YouTube channel, which is the Moving Iron Podcast YouTube channel. And you can also go to TikTok as well at Moving Iron Podcast. I got a brand new website up. You can go to movingironllc.com. You can check out all the information there. Rich will be at the Moving Iron Summit coming up here in Nashville, Tennessee, November 4th through the 6th. He's going to do a little roundtable breakout session talking about what he sees happening in the marketplace. So if you want to hear more from Rich about what's going on at the end of Telling 24, go ahead and get signed up for that now. And you can do that all live on movingironllc.com/Moving Iron Summit there at the top. So check that out. So with that, I'm Casey Seymour with Rich Possen. It's going to be smart, folks.
The Moving Iron Podcast is brought to you by these great sponsors. Are you looking to value your equipment more accurately, target the right buyers and close more deals, reach your ideal customer? Then look no further. Fusible isn't just about ag data. It's about action. Our best-in-class solution empowers you to value your equipment accurately, make informed decisions, and find the perfect prospects. Ignite your dealership's growth at fusible.com/movingiron-podcast. Out in the field, every decision counts. You wouldn't plant without testing your soil, so why would you prospect blind? Introducing EDA, your one-stop shop for ag equipment intel. EDA goes beyond specs and prices. You get deep dive data on every piece of equipment, like UCC filings that help track ownership changes and uncover potential sales leads, D&B firmographics, which help you understand the financial health and buying power of potential customers, market trends that help you stay ahead of the curve, and insights on equipment demands and pricings. With EDA, you're not just looking at data, you're seeing opportunity. You find the right buyer, sell smarter, and build lasting relationships. Visit edadata.com for your free demo and unlock the power of knowledge. For over 80 years, Iron Solutions has been your go-to data source for ag dealers, lenders, and manufacturers. Get powerful appraisal and value forecasting tools that fuel profitable decisions anytime, anywhere. Get your free demo at ironsolutions.com. Iron Solutions, confidence in every click. Today, there are many ways to finance ag equipment, but nobody delivers simple, fast, or flexible financing like AgDirect. Learn more about your options to buy, lease, and refinance equipment at agdirect.com. Valley Transportation has been hauling ag and construction equipment across the country for the past 33 years. Call Parker at 800-657-4910 for all your trucking needs. At Valley Transportation, our goal is to help you reach yours. This podcast is proudly provided by Axon, helping dealers move more iron for the past 100 years. Find out more at axontire.com. Move more iron with Axon.
Moving iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Moving iron time and time again. Through the years you'll find us here. Moving iron.